Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
All right, Robert, before we get started here, I just want to know, make sure you don't have any kind of scary dolls in the background as you're about to record the show.
I hate dolls. They scare me. I won't go into a room at my grandma's house. This is an absolute true story because of her creepy dolls. So right now I stand in solidarity with Shayna Baszler.
Okay. Good. Also, you know, you're not planning on chopping your desk in half with a sword or anything like that either. You know,
I do legitimately have a sword not too far from me. So that is a legitimate possibility.
All right. Well, you know, it's crazy that you can say a joke about those two sentences, but you know, they happened in some form or another on the show tonight. And, you know, we'll get to the Bliss stuff a little bit later, I'm sure. But let's start off the conversation with Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley. They had the big contract signing tonight for their WWE Championship match at Hell in a Cell. We get two stipulations added to the match, with this being Drew's last chance at the WWE Championship, so long as Bobby Lashley is the champion. And then also, it will take place inside the Hell in a Cell structure. So, you know, with all that said, what do you think of the stipulations added, and what did you make of the contract signing segment itself?
Yeah, I thought this was a really uneven night for this main title program. The stipulations, I think we knew it was going to be Hell in a Cell going in, just by virtue of it being the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. So that really didn't really add a layer, because I think most people assumed that layer was already there. And then the stipulation is a decent one to use, because it's a really easy one to use, because it's meaningless, but you don't have to break it necessarily. Now, it's not like the one Cody has in AEW. This one, it's like, okay, as long as Lashley's not the champion, like, he's not going to be the forever champ. So it doesn't put the outcome, it doesn't totally give away the outcome when it's like a dumb retirement stip or something like that. So for the most part, I'm okay with the stipulations. The contract signing itself, like I said, I think it was a weird tale of two different types of momentum, where I felt like this was a really good night for MVP. I thought really strong night for MVP and for that whole presentation. And Drew, I kind of felt the opposite tonight. I don't know what was going on with Drew tonight. I've felt it the last couple of weeks, and you alluded to it, even the sword chopping the desk up. Like, something's off in this character, and it's and on the one sense, I'm like, almost like, are they trying to make him like a nerd or something? Like, I don't know what's going on with the Drew character, but it has lost something since I would say since WrestleMania, but maybe even slightly before that. But now that he's been in the same feud for 4 months, as was pointed out on the show tonight, I think he needs something to freshen up that presentation right now.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think uneven is a good way to describe not just that segment, but kind of the show in general. I thought parts of this, the contract signing as a segment, worked. I could have done without kind of a like story time with Drew McIntyre to kind of kick off the segment. But I thought when he got down to just the nuts and bolts of cutting, you know, the babyface promo that he did, I thought he was good in that spot. And I think he's always kind of had that ability, or at least within this championship run, dating back to, you know, WrestleMania 36 or whatever in 2020, to kind of cut that promo. I thought sometimes he goes too overboard, like, I'm going to, you know, dismember you or what have you. And I thought he walked up to that line in talking about the damage he was going to do to Bobby Lashley at Hell in a Cell, but didn't quite cross it. But I think like that really kind of contrasted the earlier part in a big way. And I think The Drew McIntyre that I think you can make money with as a champion is like the second half of that promo. Just put him in the ring, put him in a match with some stakes, let him talk about how important, you know, the stakes are to him, and then, you know, then just go. And I think, you know, the story time stuff, not that it was like going to derail him in any way, but I think it leans in a different direction of like too quirky, too character based, that with the sword, you know, you just start adding up into this cartoon character instead of like a real guy in the ring trying to, you know, be the best and win championships. So I thought, you know, that was kind of half and half. The thing that I wonder about though, in, as far as the stipulation, and I think you're right, I think you can kind of get out of this pretty easily down the road, but what happens to Drew McIntyre's credibility if he puts kind of his, you know, the opportunity to win this championship from Lashley one last time and talks about it in a big way and then doesn't get the job done inside Hell in a Cell? I mean, if he loses this match, I mean, it's definitive, you know, it's a definitive loss. And so I, you know, while I think he can recover if Bobby Lashley loses the title, whether it's to, you know, whoever, Brock Lesnar or somebody else, he can jump right back in the title picture. But, you know, there's a chance that he's damaged as an act, like three times out saying he's going to beat Bobby Lashley and not doing so, especially this time without the kind of the crutch to lean on, which was, hey, I was distracted or the last few times. I mean, he won't have that this go around. And so, you know, I almost wonder if they're going to, you know, pull the trigger on a title switch here now that they've looped in that, you know, that stip.
Yeah, they could, and I really wouldn't put it past them, although I think probably that's not necessarily the best way to go. And if something, as I was analyzing the whole Drew presentation tonight, is that he's actually not very good in the chase in general, and I think we've seen that a lot. Like, he's a pretty good champion, and he even admitted it himself on the Austin podcast, but I think it's really been exposed over these past couple of months, you know, even prior to WrestleMania, him losing the title. And it's he kind of has a bit of a whiny vibe to the character, even if he is wronged in the situation. He's just kind of the guy that's been complaining on Raw a lot. And so what you point to, I think, is a very difficult thing, because if we go back to that, either then like all the complaining, you know, it was unjustified. And I don't think that's the way you want to frame him. And certainly you don't want to frame him as a loser, because he is kind of one of those top draft pick kind of guys that he's either at the top or he's doesn't really have a presence on the card in that same way, in that same type of impact. I would think if they are not going to go with him, it would be either a brand switch scenario, or if you give him some kind of indication that he needs some time off or something like that, would be the way to go there. I would not keep him on your television consistently if the decision is to have him lose here.
Yeah, and I think that – correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe they did announce the draft coming up later this year. So, I mean, that's certainly something that's in the cards. But yeah, I mean, and then also you got to think about, all right, you know, you had an opportunity to have him win the title in front of fans. You didn't go with it. You went with Lashley. That's, you know, can debate that point. But then to flip around 2 months later, have him win back in the Thunderdome again, like, you know, I don't know that that's a sound decision either. But so it'll be interesting to see how they book themselves out of this, Robert. What about Lashley's presentation tonight? I mean, anything stand out to you about him, either different? I thought he looked a little bit more comfortable out there. I kind of liked the slouching in the chair. He had the title belt, like, you know, on his shoulder, but kind of sliding off. It just had the look of a real comfortable but arrogant heel champion. And then, you know, MVP as his mouthpiece, I thought really served him well. So I liked his presentation tonight.
Yeah, I think I liked it too much, to be honest with you, because it's kind of like that Ric Flair thing that they would get into. And obviously this is modeled off of like a Ric Flair type of presentation, but it's a why am I supposed to hate this guy? He seems like it's all working out for him, and he's got it all under control. And that was that's honestly my only issue with it. Is it's like, no, the relatable one isn't the weirdo with the sword who's telling this big long story about something. It's the cool guy. The cool guy's the one with all the women that has this other guy that's doing all his dirty work for him. So that's my only actual criticism. As far as the presentation, though, they found it with Lashley. It took everyone talks about the long journey of Drew, and I swear I'm not picking on Drew. We're talking about him a lot now. You know, Kofi and Drew talking about their long journey, but it's an equally long journey with Lashley, and they finally found how to present him in a way that's like super effective and hides some of the flaws that he has. And then even when he spoke, it's taken a couple of years, but it's a little less awkward each time. And I thought tonight was another step in that direction.
Yeah, me too. And I just, you hit the nail on the head at the start. Like, MVP had a really good night, and, you know, he carries some of the weight of these promos for Lashley. I think, you know, I don't know that Lashley's the guy that can go out there and just cut kind of the nuts and bolts promo, you know, like, and get from point A to point B to point C. But, man, you know, he just looked the part in there, kind of MVP did his thing and kind of, you know, helped, you know, navigate the segment along. And, you know, that's good chemistry. It's good chemistry, you know, and Lashley clicks better having someone to play off of like that. And I thought it really shined tonight.
Yeah, it accentuates what the positive attributes that Lashley are, like, in a lot of ways. And that's what this presentation does. Like, you know, there's not too many wrestlers where we look at now in the modern day that, you know, it's a cosmetic business, as they always say. Well, with Lashley, it kind of is all about the cosmetics, and that can work because he's not, like, you know, he's not a lumbering doofus all the other times. So I think that's one of the rare times they've actually got the physique thing to kind of work in their favor in the intended way.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said. All right. We'll pause there. We'll set the table for the show, and then we will start taking your phone calls. And the caller queue is filling up for us right now. But this is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering the June 7th, 2021 edition of Monday Night Raw. I'm PW Torch assistant editor Zach Cadorn filling in for Wade tonight. Wade will be on the VIP side of things, as usual, with the Wade Keller Hotline running down tonight's show and all the happenings. And if you're interested in going VIP, it's pwtorch.com/govip, pwtorch.com/govip. More on that a little bit later. The other voice you hear tonight is the host of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans on the PW Torch Daily Cast, Mr. Robert Vallejos. Robert, so great to talk to you, my friend. You know, hopefully you're not, you know, scarred from the doll segment at the end of the show.
It never fails. You know, so there's a whole list of contributors that there's a theme every time they're on, and I always get the weirdest, like, themed Alexa universe segment. That's my gimmick, I guess, when I'm on here.
Yep, we should have predicted that, you know, as soon as I picked up, you know, sent you a DM to say, hey, can you join the show, that, you know, the Bliss Fiend weirdness would be in the main event slot. You know, it never fails.
Bruce Pritchard's got my line tapped, and every time he sees that I'm invited on, they rewrite the show right then and there.
Yep. That's the only explanation. The phone lines are open, 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. Make sure to go ahead and press 1 to let me know that you want to jump on and talk to us tonight. If you don't want to talk and you want to just hit us up with a topic or two via email, we will hit the mailbag segment a little bit later. That's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. So with that said, Robert, if you're ready to go, let's take the first call.
Bring him on.
Great. And, you know, we do have a decent little line here. So, you know, 1-2 topics would be awesome. And then we just make sure we can get everybody in. So we'll start off, let's see, with 615. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Zach and Robert, always good to talk to you. Sean, BFP from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good, Sean. Great to talk to you as well. What did you think of Raw, man?
Well, first I'll say, Robert, I don't think I've actually got to talk to you on these post shows, man. Good to talk to you. I haven't called on Raw for a while, partly because it's been so bad, and tonight was no exception. It was still a very bad show, in my opinion. It is not getting a lot better. I will say, like you guys said about the Drew segment, I thought it was a solid segment. Because, like you said, MVP did a good job, and Lashley I thought was a lot better tonight. And he's always been good, but he was really good tonight. But I want to go to the bad. I hate to do that, but let's start with the Rhea and Charlotte. I know, Zach, you've said it many times, and I totally agree. Stop having people that are wrestling in a big match, stop putting them in tag teams and act like they have all this hostility. Like, we know they're going to have hostility. We understand this. And to put them together and just to have them bicker the entire match just took me out of the match. I just didn't care about it really anymore because I knew what was going to happen. I knew one of them was going to get rolled up, and I didn't care for that. And then my other really bad point was, and if you're a VIP member, Todd talked about this on the Fix VIP show at length. Nikki has been looking, and I love Nikki as a babyface, but she's looked awful these last 3 weeks. Awful. To make her celebrate going 2 minutes and running around the ring like she does look like an idiot, trying to get in, and then, oh, she beat Charlotte. No, she didn't. Beat Rhea. No, she didn't. Then she's excited about it. Then she gets a pin when Charlotte nails Rhea and pins her and acts like she's won the Super Bowl or won WrestleMania or, you know, was that not as bad as we all thought it was? It was terrible in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you. I was not a fan of this segment and just not a fan of the build to this Charlotte and Rhea Ripley match. Like, I mean, nobody involved in this, from Nikki Cross to Charlotte to Rhea. Asuka is now associated with it. I don't think she looks great either. But nobody is getting more over, and nobody is in a good position from a character perspective. I don't think the audience knows who to cheer and why. It's just all kind of happening. And you know, I think Rhea and Charlotte can have a good match once it gets in the ring. It's not that. Like, I think at Hell in a Cell, like, we could easily see, like, a really, really good match out of them. But, man, the week-to-week stuff just takes away from what it could mean and what it could be. I second your point about Nikki Cross. It's kind of like, you know, I think she can, in a weird way, I think she's genuine enough that she kind of can get it over. But like in the back of your mind, it's impossible not to think like, hey, you know, you didn't win the match though. Like, it's great that you're excited, but you didn't win. I think what drove me crazy more so than that was just at the, like, and they kind of pivoted from this as the match went on with the shenanigans back and forth between Ripley and Charlotte. But I couldn't stand at the beginning of that match, Ripley just voluntarily like taking a back seat and like just listening to Charlotte's orders. Like, hey, go stand there. Hey, I'm going in the ring first. Hey, tag out. I'm going to watch you wrestle now. It's like I don't think Ripley's been presented strong to this point, but that to me was, you know, the worst presentation of her to date, like taking that back seat as a champion. Like, that just did not like put out a good perception of her and just showed kind of the raw audience that, yeah, she's wearing the belt, but you know, she's not the top dog. And I think Rhea Ripley right now is at a point in her run where she's got to establish herself as, you know, an alpha of the Raw women's division, and seeing her kind of take a back seat and play second fiddle to Charlotte in that match as her tag team partner, you know, even with the silly story of, can they coexist or not, was just not a good look, Robert. What did you make of that situation?
Yeah, all of it was very not good, for lack of a better phrase there. And that's another theme when I'm on here, as we complain about the women's division and what a wreck it is week after week on Raw. And as you said, nobody, maybe Nikki is getting a little bit of a plus just because she's on television. So there is that to her. Everyone's so ill-defined though in this whole scenario, and it changes. It's fluid, but not in an intriguing way of fluidity. It's fluid in just that, like, okay, this week you will like me, next week you will like this person, and it kind of keeps going, and there's no grounding of any of these characters whatsoever in this women's division. And like I'm agreeing with you too, as far as the you know, two people who are going to have a match at the pay-per-view, they're going to tag team together. Can they coexist? As a general concept, you know, as a year zero, just thinking like, you know, no context, whatever, I think that's actually a cool hook, but you have to only use it like once every 7 years or something. And I'm being super honest with that, because that's the only way that would be, you know, something intriguing. I remember being a kid, the first time it was like Rock and Triple H, and they did that on the SmackDown. And I was on edge the whole SmackDown, like, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
But when they came out, they presented it, and I think it was against a lesser tag team too. That was the other key to it, as like these two alphas who both, you know, got butted heads because they're trying to outdo each other and that sort of thing. This, like you said, was just weird, where they're going to kind of pretend to work together. And also, like, what's the what's the gravitas in winning that match? Also, that's the other thing that doesn't really work. Like, it can work maybe if it's in a tag title situation, because then mm-hmm. theoretically there is something to be gained from that. Like, you know, obviously they didn't care about the match because that's how the finish went. Like, and it wasn't a shocking thing in this whole environment, and this is a larger systemic issue. When wins and losses don't matter, that trope specifically has no value, no currency at all.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And here's the other thing, too. It's like, I think, you know, this can they coexist thing, like, it's easier to pull off, or, like, can be pulled off if you have characters that you care about and that are well-defined. You know, the fact is, like, right now, Charlotte and Rhea Ripley are both heels, you know, and I know they're trying to pivot Ripley the other way, but it's she doesn't come across as likable within any of this. And then you got Charlotte, who, you know, has been, you know, portrayed as a heel since she kind of made her return. And it's like, what, you know, the story is, can they coexist? But both are unlikable. Why does it matter? Like, why does the audience care? That tension, like that Rock Triple H tension that you're talking about, is not there, because I don't think the audience is really invested in either of the acts right now, and they both just get dragged down with that coexisting thing kind of hanging over their head. So yeah, this was a mess, and you know, Robert, I don't know exactly how you fix it. I mean, yes, like Becky Lynch coming back and kind of just readjusting the whole division will obviously, you know, put things back into perspective. I don't know if she's destined for Raw, but if, you know, if she does get moved over to SmackDown, I mean, this thing doesn't have an easy fix at this point in time.
No, and because these problems exist with less severity, but still kind of exist on the SmackDown brand, but at least the characters are a little more defined in the women's division, but like they're one superstar shakeup from, you know, Bianca being a heel and a face every other week. Like, we know that's a possibility. So I just think you would just have to be disciplined in it. That's what it would come down to here, is you have to define these people in a way that's meaningful, and you have to take advantage of your roster. It's the same people interacting week after week after week after week. You know, so there's no stakes. There's no climbing a ladder. There's none of that. It's just trading dance partners and doing this do-si-do in the women's division. And they've got women, you know, under contract, but it gives the appearance of this very thin roster. And you know, I don't want to be mean about it, but like, okay, you just had someone like Lana released, so that was a bummer. But that's why you have people like that around, so you can beat them and, you know, build segments and do that kind of thing. This kind of thing, this ain't it. This is just a retread of just like, okay, they're going to have a match, so what are the points we got to go to get there? With that said, the end point I think actually will be very good. It's something I'm looking forward to is the match between the two of them. Just the road to get there is quite boring.
And that's the brutal part. It's just that, you know, the end game is going to be just fine once they get to Hell in a Cell. And it's just like, man, if they could just adjust this build, and not just this one. I mean, you have this issue of poorly defined characters all the way through the show. I mean, we talked about it at the top, like Lashley, you know, yeah, he's the heel, I guess, but boy, he comes off as pretty darn cool, you know? I mean, so how, you know, that there's a dichotomy there that's off. You've got, you know, the AJ Styles Omos tag team. I mean, heel, babyface, we don't really know at this point. And so just up and down, like, even like, you know, RK-Bro, I mean, I think, you know, obviously I think they're babyfaces, but then they're, you know, positioned against the New Day. So like, what's the, you know, rooting interest there? I mean, you've got this kind of systemic problem on Raw that just makes it, you know, tough to kind of get behind the stories that they're trying to tell. Sean, back to you on all of that. It's a lot of stuff. So either take something from there or another topic altogether.
Yeah, I like Zach what you just said at the very beginning. Great conversation altogether. But what you said at the beginning, as far as Rhea kind of taking a backseat, I didn't think about that initially. But once you brought that up, that was a great point, because she just has not looked like a champion in a lot of ways at all. And then to take that backseat, you know, kind of made her feel even less of a champion. So that was, you know, just like, it was just all around. It's just bad all around. And so now I want to go, the other topic I was going to bring up, because I know there's a lot more callers that want to talk and I want to hear what their topics are. But the main one I had was kind of going back to, I've been with you, I think. I've kind of liked what they've done with Cedric Alexander here lately. I mean, I still don't like love it, but I've liked it. I'm you know, kind of in to see where they're going with it. You know, just with his heel character, even though it's kind of over the top, but it hasn't gone too crazy. But then you have him go against a guy, Jeff Hardy, who, again, Jeff Hardy's a great legend in the business and has done a lot of good things. But the last time he wrestled, he gets, you know, just demolished by Jinder Mahal, wherever Jinder is, who knows. I mean, who cares, I guess, but who knows where he's at. But he gets dominated, you know, first match back on TV. And then they just bring up this, you know, storyline of, oh, well, you know, Cedric's being crazy and I'm going to put him in his place. And then if you're, whatever you're trying to build up to Cedric, you crush it losing to Jeff Hardy. It's like, just all these back and forth matches of guys losing and win, you know, winning and losing back and forth. I just don't know what they're trying to do with a lot of these people. It just feels like they're just smashing them into the ground everywhere you turn. And so I wanted to hear what you guys just thought about that match in general. But guys, I appreciate you, everything you do. Zach, again, hope your daughter's doing well, and thank you guys for taking my call. As always, Robert, good to talk to you, man.
Thanks so much, Sean. Appreciate the call. Always great to talk to you as well. Yeah, Robert, I mean, I had the same thought, you know, about Cedric. And I think I've been in the camp that kind of, like, likes the Cedric direction, not necessarily because it's, like, you know, pristine performance, but because it's something. I think, well, for me, what he's lacked as a singles act for a long time is just having that place to go to. I mean, he's so good in the ring, but I think on the character side of things and with the personality, he hasn't figured out a way to kind of get that off the page. And, you know, with the yelling promos, they're annoying to be sure. But to me, it is a step in the right direction because it's something else. And it's some, you know, kind of like turning the volume up on a part of them. And I, you know, when the match was booked, I'm thinking Cedric Alexander versus Jeff Hardy. All right, they're going to go ahead and, you know, give Alexander this win. And you know, who knows, you know, what happens with him, you know, moving forward. He gets the loss, and now you're kind of left going, okay, you know, what are we really supposed to feel about this guy now, you know? So, I mean, I don't get the sense that he's on, you know, or he was ever on this, like, giant upward trajectory, but, you know, he's a low-card guy and maybe, you know, flirts with the mid-card from time to time. But you know, yeah, Jeff Hardy's kind of this legend, but he hasn't been really – positioned as one, and so I thought it was a bad loss and a bad night for Cedric and for Cedric fans.
No, I was stunned that that's how it went down. I thought something else was definitely bound to happen because it's been signaled to us that Jeff Hardy is kind of just a name at this point and not actually going to be anything more than that. I think it was Sean Ross that pointed out, like, he hadn't won a singles match since January. And then suddenly,
oh my God, wow,
just got a victory over here. And that's the lesser issue of, like, what does this, you know, mean for Cedric? It'd be one thing if, like, you know, we start seeing this and they're going to use Jeff Hardy, in a role to either be elevated or to actually, you know, put people over. And it's the same pattern you got into with Rey Mysterio a couple of years ago where they weren't beating anybody, but also weren't putting anybody over. So they're just a legend to be a legend. And I thought this was like a perfect spot for Cedric to just be super annoying to kind of enhance what they were doing. I really did think it was good what they did with him and Shelton. I wasn't a fan in general of the overarching thing of breaking up the Hurt Business, but being that that's the direction that they went into, I thought, you know, making Cedric just so annoying, and then there is a little bit of that sympathy for Shelton. I thought that was a good way to go, and I thought we were going to see a similar thing play out with Jeff Hardy, or at least the start of it. And to just have you know, Hardy win clean really undermined everything.
Yeah, it did, and, like, you know, the crazy thing is, I mean, you know, I totally see him just going back, you know, to the same match next week, getting Cedric his win back, and it's just like, you know, that's not going to make even like a low level star on the show. I mean, you got, you know, if you're going with somebody, you have to go with them. You have to signal to the audience that this is somebody that you want to pay attention to, or that we ought to pay attention to. And, you know, flipping wins back and forth is not going to get that message across, even to someone on the level of Cedric Alexander. And so, yeah, that was a surprise. I thought the match was okay. You know, I thought the match was good, was fine. But yeah, the outcome was that. Wild, wild. Thanks, Sean. We'll go now to Sam from Nebraska. Sam, what did you think of Monday Night Raw tonight?
I did not think it was a very good episode. But I was wanted to talk about briefly what is – I was really hoping I was just having a hallucination of a Elias Jackson Riker feud that is now continuing onwards. I'm dreading this.
Yeah.
I was curious what your guys' thoughts were.
Yeah, boy. I mean, I going into the show tonight, like, really, well, really coming out of last week, Robert, you're saying to yourself, are they, you know, are they going with the Jackson Riker babyface turn? Like, certainly, they, you know, they can't be going down that road. Like, you know, my eyes, like, they're deceiving me. And, you know, it certainly feels like that. You know, the commentary talked about, you know, his history, and, you know, he was positioned very much as a, hey, cheer this guy type way. The whole thing, just for me, does nothing. You know, on either side of things, like, I don't think Riker has it. I just from, like, a, just even from a wrestling perspective, like, I mean, that the before the match where he's beating up Elias, you know, ahead of the match, I mean, the punches were off. He was missing them left and right. Like, it just doesn't look like the guy kind of gets what's supposed to be happening in there. And then you have on you know, a heel, quote unquote, in Elias that I don't think, you know, resonates any real heel emotion from the audience, whether there's crowd there or they're at home. So the whole thing to me just comes off really cold and just kind of, again, just there and happening without any kind of real true context behind it, Robert.
Yeah, it's the worst type of babyface turn when the heel just decides they don't like you anymore, and then now you're
yeah,
a babyface.
Right.
Like, that never works. Ask Randy Orton. That does not work long term. And beside that, like, you know, it kind of worked a little bit with someone like Sasha a few months ago because people actually like Sasha. I don't know if there's a Jackson Riker fan. I'm sure one exists somewhere. I've never met him, never talked to him online. There might be. It's also the thing of the newly turned face always has to cheat in their first match because I guess they still have the heel residue on them or something. Because, yeah, like, well, not cheating, but the beard grab was a little weird.
Yeah,
so
right.
The whole thing was just kind of awkward. I felt it was all awkward. I felt to myself, I don't know, I guess if I was rooting for somebody, kind of rooting for Elias, which is weird on several different levels. So, yeah, none of that really, really worked in at all. So for 2 weeks in a row, it's been weird. At least last week there was a little bit of intrigue, I guess, with the way Elias was kind of doing it. But this was the payoff. I thought that would be the end too. Like, oh, they're having the match. This is something they don't care about. But I get the strange feeling we're going to see like another 3 weeks of this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can't believe I'm going to ask this question, but I will. You know, Jackson Riker, like, some out of the ring issues, some backstage issues, you know, said some or commented on, I don't remember exactly the context, but on social media, some just not nice things, and just has been like a background player even outside of that. I mean, you know, taking all of that into account, I mean, does he have any sort of future, like, or is for on Monday Night Raw, or is this thing just dead in the water before it starts?
Well, what could the future be? Like, I just don't see where the path forward is. As you said, there is the quote off the field stuff, and look, there's a lot of off the field stuff everywhere you go. So it's not a hurdle that can't be overcome. The problem with that is, and I hope I don't get into trouble with that, is you kind of get the feeling that whatever character he's going to play, babyface or heel, is going to kind of lean into that direction, one way or the other. So that's going to be kind of hard. To shake that. So you kind of have to be honest with it there. And then, like, I can't even make a judgment just on talent if he's going to be any good other than, like, those great punches, as you mentioned tonight, if he's going to be good or not, because I just, like, I could not tell you that much about him. I know he's kind of been around a while, but like you said, he's like the guy that stood next to Elias, or the guy that was in the NXT faction that was, like, at the time when I really didn't watch NXT that much because it wasn't very good because there was a lot of focus on that stuff. So I really can't give a full-throated judgment of what he can be, but my hopes are not very high.
Yeah, no, and you know, as, even with this turn or whatever, I mean, he hasn't still hasn't shown any personality. I still don't know kind of what or who he is. And then you layer on top of that, that off the field stuff, the fact that he just questionable in the ring. And yeah, here's the, you know, again, I don't want to beat the segment up too bad, but you know, I Raw does not need this to go on for another 2 to 3 weeks. It just doesn't. Sam, back to you.
Yeah, I just, especially with how it ended tonight, you just know they're going to have a couple more matches, which just bothers me. The other thing I was going to say, wanted to bring up, that was also just like drawing things out and deleted, in my opinion, probably to some sort of triple threat, is the double count out with Ricochet and Umberto. And then also it seemed like Ricochet was trying to do more like strikes and everything, which I thought was interesting, particularly in the corner tonight. I just kind of wanted your thoughts on that too.
Yeah, I really liked that match. When I saw the graphic that, hey, that match is going to happen, I was kind of like, okay, you know, I'm on board with that. And so I liked the match. the criticism I think is one that most would have is just, I think you want to have definitive winners for those kind of matches. I mean, because the match was really good, and I thought Ricochet with kind of the fresh offense was interesting to watch. I think Umberto has really come a long way and is a guy who can, you know, kind of be a fixture in that mid-card picture for a while. So I like that match. I just think, you know, you want to have some sort of definitive finish, like give, like reward people for sticking with the match, like reward people for being excited about a match happening and let it pay off. You know, I don't like if Ricochet, I mean, ultimately it appears that they're probably headed towards some sort of triple threat match at Hell in a Cell, Sheamus versus those two guys, or in a triple threat against those two guys. But you can get there other ways. Like even if I just think you've got other booking crutches that you can use, and you can still, you know, make sure that the match has a winner. You know, Robert, did you like the match, and what did you think of Ricochet and also the kind of the United States title picture as a whole?
Yeah, I like that it seems like a slight freshening up for Ricochet because he's kind of like a perfect example of the guy on the hamster wheel where it feels like you cannot watch Raw for like 9 months and Ricochet's kind of doing the same thing it feels like, or a different version of the same thing over and over and over again. He looks as if everything's just kind of the same with him. And he's super talented, so it's kind of unfortunate. And you do kind of gravitate if he's got a match, especially like this one with Carrillo. It's like, okay, let's settle in and see what this is going to be. And I don't have like a massive problem with what they did here. I agree with you on balance, but like it's you know, not on my top list of things like, wow, you know, they need to fix that. The title picture as a whole, pleasantly pleased with it. We've talked about this a lot over the last couple of months, but Sheamus did really well, you know, as sort of a transition in the title picture. And then, he's held it down on the mid-card title pretty well. I even think like the mask thing kind of worked for him today with the, you know, the Rip Hamilton attire he had going on. It's just like he's just this salty, surly dude, and it's a perfect affect to him. And you know, telling the commentators to look up where he's ranked as far as good-looking people, which is just like funny. But he didn't say it as funny, and so that's when wrestling is hilarious, when it's heels saying ridiculous things delivered in a non-funny way, and they're just hilarious. So I'm a fan of this scene. I wasn't the biggest fan of what happened tonight, but I was also not necessarily offended by it either.
Yeah, I like what they're doing here too with Sheamus, and kind of like you said about Bobby Lashley, like almost too much. Like I think Wade talked about this last week on one of the shows, that it's like, is it, would a crowd full of people, you know, be cheering Sheamus, you know, beating up Ricochet and Carrillo just because he's just so kind of badass cool looking? I think it remains to be seen. I think if you're WWE, I think you should try to book, you know, your baby faces so that they're not like ganging up on the heel and almost bullying him, which you've kind of got that vibe before the match started tonight. Not a big thing, and not something that I think Sheamus is talented enough as a heel to kind of pivot and get past that. But I think just in practice, you just don't want to have your baby faces doing that, because it doesn't make them look good, you know? But I like the division right now too. I think Sheamus is anchoring it in a big way. And my hope is, if WWE's smart, you know, they're looking two, three months down the road and going, all right, you know, who can we, you know, get ready as a babyface to kind of knock Sheamus off the pedestal, you know, and have him go on this like long run on Raw, you know, and take on all comers, you know, in the mid card of the roster, and then, you know, use that spot and use that championship as a means to get kind of a new, not new necessarily, but a focused piece of talent over, you know, a guy that sticks out that we haven't seen for a while that could take that spot. And I think they could have a really good feud with Sheamus is Damian Priest. You know, he wasn't on the show tonight. I don't think, but he's a guy that, you know, I think you kind of look at and go, all right, like let's, he had a big spot at WrestleMania, you know, so let's go with him a little more. And I think if you can keep Sheamus on this kind of heel streak of good matches, good performances, believable segments, I think you have a good piece of business there a little bit later on for that kind of up and coming babyface, Robert.
Yeah, and it's it will mean something theoretically as long as they do it correct. As long as like he just doesn't lose, you know, next week on Raw in a match they had, you know, because someone's music played and they had a match. It needs to mean something, and I think it will. And I think that's a good suggestion. I watched last week's Raw right before I watched this week's Raw, so I can't remember either. Priest was on. I know I saw him, but that might have been on the wrong show. But yeah, somebody like that who tarnished also, you know, who hasn't lost a lot, who's just kind of been hanging around, I think would be a good candidate. And you forget why mid-card titles exist, because it's been so long since they've used them in an effective manner. And this is exactly what a mid-card title really can do. It's something, it's almost completely separate from the main title, and it's defined that way, and defined down in a good way. Then, like, no, this is a different prize that you're pursuing. It's not a consolation prize as it kind of gets presented as so often in the last, you know, 20 years.
Yeah. Sam, back to you.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, Sheamus to me has definitely been the MVP of Raw this first half of the year. And I've never been a big Sheamus fan, but I think he's doing just fantastic. He's regularly one of the highlights of the show that, you know, whenever he's on. So other than that, just keep on doing what you're doing, and go VIP, everyone.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate the call, as always. pwtorch.com/goVIP. That's pwtorch.com/goVIP. Up next, we'll go to Kyle next, and Nick, we'll go to you after that. Kyle, thanks for calling. What do you think of the show tonight?
This is a really good episode tonight. I think I have two things I want to talk about. I'll first talk about Alexa Bliss in that entire segment. I thought, for me personally, I love this Alexa Bliss character that she now has a feud. Been saying this for a month now that she needs to be in a feud with someone. So glad she's in. Look, Shayna's been defined down so many times, and it's WWE's fault. Look, I never was a Shayna Baszler fan. I never will be. But I am glad Alexa's going to be in the feud, and this is going to just benefit Alexa. And look what Shayna did tonight. I always thought that Shayna was always not that good. She's out screaming and being afraid. I did see her work a little bit in NXT with her matches and her run as NXT champion. But now she's of Alexa Bliss. Alexa Bliss is being pushed. I like to see it, and she's going to be. I still think it's going to lead her to win the women's championship at some point, and people will like it when. So that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, a good topic. I'm glad that you brought it up because we haven't spent a lot of time on it yet. So, yeah, I mean, Robert. So I agree with Kyle on part of his argument, which is, you know, Alexa Bliss, I very much think had to have someone to play off of with all this craziness, right? I mean, I think the shtick of just being in Alexa's playground and kind of talking to the doll really was running its course quick, and it's been happening for, you know, since WrestleMania, since, you know, towards the middle of April. So, you know, on one hand, glad that she's got someone to put that on and some context around what's happening from just like a pro wrestling feud perspective. Shayna Baszler is that person, at least for right now. On the flip side, I don't know that we need to debate kind of the merits of the type of angle that this is, you know, and the type of story with the pyro and the fire and the, you know, the dolls appearing, not appearing, because, you know, that kind of, I think we've beaten that up at this point in terms of like, yes, it should be on a wrestling show. No, it shouldn't. But the Shayna Baszler thing is what kind of got me at the end. Like, I think Shayna Baszler, the character, you know, going into this, it was kind of like, all right, which way are they going to go with her? Is this something to help make Shayna Baszler, or is this something to help make Alexa Bliss? And it was very much, in my opinion, after watching it, the latter. Like, Baszler going in and talking all big about, oh, it's just a doll, and then running scared away from it, you know, in the end after she steps on it. Like, it just all was too hokey, and I think it really hurt her credibility as this, you know, badass wrestler that she's, you know, been portrayed as in NXT, that has kind of fizzled a little bit on the main roster. But I think it just, the way this was booked tonight tells you where the focus of this is, and it's all Alexa Bliss.
Yeah, I didn't mind that as much, though, just because I don't think this, I think what we think of Shayna as in her presentation and what it's actually been are probably two different things of what Shayna's presentation could be and versus what it is. So I'm basically okay with that. And like you said, we don't want to beat that other topic to death. We need to make time to talk about should Rob be 3 hours or not. We got to spend another hour debating that. But yeah, in the context of this stuff in this universe, this was, I thought, on the higher end tonight, the way it went down, because until you got to the very end, it was actually less ridiculous than these segments normally are. This was just, you know, Alexa just kind of being weird instead of Alexa being supernatural for a large part of it. And for the most part, Shayna didn't show fear until she started backing up. And then it got a little hokey because, as my 11-year-old son pointed out, like, so Shayna's afraid of the pyro that goes off when wrestlers come to the ring. That was a little weird. That was a little weird to be scared of. But now I understand the randomness of it going off suddenly. And then it becomes farcical. I thought, though, Shayna showed enough of, like, you know, it's just a doll, it's just a doll, it's just a doll. But then to be actually freaked out. But, and I agree with you ultimately, Zach. This is, I think, the kind of onboarding ramp to define Alexa within the context of the women's division, and whether that leads, you know, to a title or wherever it goes. I think this is where it gets to it. So I'm glad that this doesn't look like it's like an extended feud with Reginald or something like that, because I don't think that right. would have had what this, you know, potentially could be within this framework.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, that's right where I'm at with it. I mean, I'm just generally lower on this type of stuff. I've always have been, but I think, you know, you got some clues tonight as to kind of what they're going to try to do with it, you know? And I think it is, it's kind of a figure out a way to take Alexa Bliss out of the playground stuff and make it applicable to maybe having a match at some point down the road, you know? And it looks like maybe they're going to some sort of Shayna Baszler versus Alexa Bliss match. I think, you know, even though Shane is not the focus of this, you know, on the flip side of that argument, it's, you know, the company is, you know, the show is behind this type of thing, the Alexa's Playground thing and Alexa Bliss. And so, you know, Baszler kind of being elevated into that spot to play off against Bliss is not, you know, it's not a great place for her to be, because she's not the focus and she's not the act she was in NXT. But I do, you know, think there's an argument to be made that it's a better spot for her than kind of toiling away in a Reginald angle in the, you know, the women's tag team division. What do you think?
I was going to make that exact point. As I'll take this as ludicrous as this might get over what she's been doing for the last 3 months. She looks better tonight than anything she was doing with you know, going to try and close with Reginald or whatever ridiculous stuff they've had them doing. I agree with that absolutely. Even if she is ultimately just a vessel to get Alexa over, this is a much better use of her than you know, throwing Lana through a table and all that just nonsense that we've been talking about for like 9 months with her.
Yeah. I mean, and then like the thing is, like, the silver lining is, hey, you know, you never know, you know, what she might or might not show, you know, Vince McMahon during all this. Like, maybe it's like, wow, really impressed with Shayna Baszler. You know, let's push her even more. You know, I mean,
is she,
I think,
still a vampire?
Yeah, maybe. Right. Maybe she's the new vampire.
Maybe she could re-conjure that up from 2 years ago and, you know, she could go toe-to-toe.
Oh, my gosh. So I want to go down the Alexa Bliss rabbit hole a little bit more in terms of just the longevity for her in this spot, but actually, you know, getting in the ring and having matches. Kyle, you know, says, hey, thinks she can be the champion within the year. You know, I certainly wouldn't take it off the table. I mean, the Fiend was the champion, so I mean, I wouldn't completely rule it out. But
I
mean,
the only reason why I always say that every week is because I look at the women's division on Raw and I see nobody credible enough besides, you know, Charlotte Rilla at this point. Besides Charlotte, who else is credible enough for Rhea to face besides Alexa Bliss at this point and within this character? That's why at this point they're only hyping up those three women at this point on Monday Night Raw in terms of who they like and who they're really building up and kind of protecting. That's why I always go back to Alexa Bliss, because besides Charlotte and Rhea, I don't know who else is there. And I'm sick of Asuka at this point as champion. Besides really them four, really three at this point, I don't know who else is there credible for Rhea to face as the championship. And even if Alexa wins the championship, it'll be the same issue. So I guess, but that's why I always keep saying it.
No, I think it's a fair point. You know, I think it's definitely a fair point. I mean, you know, you look at the even just from a time perspective on, like, the inventory on Raw. You know, Rhea Ripley gets some, Charlotte gets a bunch, and, you know, Alexa Bliss is right up there. It's not in the form of a match necessarily, but in terms of focus, she's certainly up there in terms of, you know, a priority character on the show. Robert, does that mean championship run?
I think it's highly likely, because it's kind of needed in a weird kind of way, like you were saying, caller, because it's so stale at the top. It's what we led off with tonight, with, you know, how stale that women's division is, and so maybe that's the direction where you go into. And I'll just say it, and I've said this before, but Alexa's a lot better at doing this than Bray Wyatt ever was. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. This works a little bit better in the show than anything Bray Wyatt did for the last 2 years, wasting everybody's time. And I think you could get a decent title feud out of that, as ludicrous as it may be. I don't think you have to go down the Seth Rollins Fiend route where it just ruins everybody involved, or the Goldberg route or whatever. I think you can make this work. It'll take a lot of care, but I think you can turn her into a champion. She has to kind of start wrestling, though, and maybe this is the start to that. So what I said earlier, so I think this is the onboarding to that, but I think they can pull it off. Like, I don't want to give them too much credit, but I think this is in their zone. This is the stuff they can do, and I think they can make it work.
Well, and the other reason, that this kind of on-ramp is important is, you know, you're not going to have, you don't have, starting in the middle of July, you know, you're not going to have the luxury of Bede in the Thunderdome anymore. You know, you're not going to be able to do the lights out thing with the weird stuff on the screens. And, like, you'll be able to work some backstage stuff and some pre-tapes and all that. But, you know, the show will be different when they're live in front of fans. I mean, you're not going to be able to have a show where, you know, the big angles are taking place not, you know, in the ring, and not with, like, those special effects, and you're going to have to just figure out a different way to do it. And, you know, business still happens, you know, in that ring. And so this, I think, is a recognition of that. And like, hey, we like this Alexa Bliss thing, but we got to get the act ready to be, you know, to work in front of a live audience. Kyle, back to you. Any other points tonight?
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, it's going to be, that's what is going to be really fascinating when fans come back, how they're going to treat the Alexa Bliss character the most. I feel like it won't be excited about that, how they focus on that character in front of real fans. So I'll look forward to that. Even an entry McIntyre, but
we may have lost you there, Kyle. Hey, Kyle, you broke up a bit. Can you start over again?
Can you hear me? Is it good now?
Yeah, we're good now. Just start over because I didn't catch your question.
Okay, I was talking about Eva Marie talking about being the title being in a match for next week. So, look, I'm kind of interested in it because you know she has been the last few weeks anyway. Before in the very very beginning, she was doing the whole looking like a model type of situation. But the last few weeks, she's been in a training room working out, then being in the ring itself. And so I'm very sure what she's going to do in the ring next week because I think she needs to shock a lot of people and end up being at least a good wrestler. Not like a great wrestler, but at least a good wrestler. Then I'll get to Drew McIntyre and all that whole situation. But what do you think about Eva Marie coming back in the ring?
Yeah, Robert, I'll throw to you first on that. I don't know that it's confirmed she's going to have a match. I didn't necessarily get that sense, I could be wrong about that. What's your just take on her and her potential and kind of the teases to this point?
Yeah, if they're self-aware about it, there could be something really cool. I think they could have something here if they're self-aware about her just being like this oblivious heel and just being like your most annoying like friend on Instagram that posts all this. if that's where they're actually going with it, I think this can work. I mean, it's a variation of the character she kind of had right before she left, which, you know, people don't remember. That was kind of getting over, and even in a non-ironic way. I would put off the wrestling as far as you can because I think there's going to be intrigue there because what do we know about Eva Marie? She's like a historically bad professional wrestler. And that's kind of what she's known for. And that's the carrot they put out in that last run is like, oh, you think she's bad? Well, we're actually not going to let you watch her wrestle. And it kind of works. I'm intrigued. I'm looking forward to that being a thing. I know some people are kind of like losing their minds about it and being, this is an affront to the division and what they've been pushing. And like, no, you could have different things on the show. There's too much of one style on the show right now anyway. And again, as long as they don't try to trot her out as a babyface, I think this will be pretty awesome. I'm excited about it.
I'm intrigued too. I mean, I don't know what necessarily she brings to the table as far as like, look, is she going to be somebody that can carry the company on her shoulders? No, that's probably not, but I don't think that's her spot. I am intrigued to see what they do, you know, and are they self-aware? Or are they not? I mean, to me, like that's the story of next week to just see what the tone of her presentation is. And I agree with you, Robert, if it's kind of like a self-aware thing where this is all kind of it ends up being a heel act that's rooted in her, you know, saying the right things, but not necessarily doing or showing the right things. That I think can work. And that you bring up a good nuance though, too, of just putting the in rings on hold for a while. Like, because you're right. Like that's where the heat was. So kind of to letting that linger and letting that part of her debut breathe a bit. I think could be really valuable in kind of developing, you know, some further intrigue because it is tough to remember. And she, you know, look, she was not a good wrestler in the ring when she left, but man, you know, I always argued that it's hard to argue with a crowd reaction like that. And, you know, sometimes the reaction comes for all the wrong reasons. And maybe that was the case, you know, but those audiences were loud. They were loud. in a negative way. And I still think you can capitalize on that if you handle it and handle her the right way, Robert.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and to get some to refresh you, look back at that little mini NXT title program she had with Bayley. Like that, again, the matches were not great. They weren't supposed to be, but there was some good stuff there. They knew what was going on at that point, and they brought in the main roster ref, and they really you just have to be self aware about it, and I think it can work, and like you said, she doesn't need to be the linchpin of the division, but as we're talking about over and over again, the division needs something, and I could see her and her and Rhea maybe having some good. Some good interplay of like, you know, just the ridiculousness of her. Ridiculousness can be overdone because often lacks the subtlety in WWE. But ridiculousness in wrestling, though, when done right, can just hit that perfect tenor, and so my hopes are high. Don't let me down here, Eva.
We'll see soon enough. Kyle, did you have one last point you said on Drew McIntyre, I think? Go ahead.
Yeah, one more thing about Drew McIntyre it's the fact that, you know, again, you know, Bobby Lashley announcing that he's have all these and has been given all these title shots. When WWE is really, really saying it on their show and it's not that on here or any other review shows I've listened to, it's very obvious that this guy needs to be done and over with. So I think he's going to lose the Hell in a Cell because I think it'll be completely – I just think it's stupid for all this time he lost at WrestleMania. He lost at Backlash, and then he's going to have Hell in a Cell. I don't like that. And once Bobby Lashley returns, I hope he does. Drew McIntyre needs to move on because he does complain, he does whine, and he's just so annoying as a babyface. He's been off for the longest time. And I think when fans come back, they're going to boo McIntyre even when he's not in the title picture. I just think people are going to be really shocked of how who are Drew McIntyre supporters are going to be shocked of how. That people don't like him anymore because he keeps getting booed. Probably, I mean, it's, you know, all the title matches every single time. So that was it about that. But that was it.
All right. Well, thanks, Kyle. Appreciate it. Thanks you for the call and thanks for the great topics as usual. Yeah.
Yep.
Kyle, you'll have to call back. I hope you do, and we'll see where he nets out as far as a crowd reaction. I'm gonna go with he still gets a strong reaction in front of a live crowd. For now, there's still what five weeks. That's not to say that I don't think, you know, the babyface act is maybe, you know, kind of sowing some breaks, you know, in the armor, so to speak. But Robert, I mean, where do you fall? I mean, is this a guy that's, you know, protected right now by having no fans there, and would he be getting beat up in front of a live audience, or, you know, is he somebody that's still, you know, presented in the right way?
So I have been resistant to that, that it's going to go bad for him whenever we get crowds back. My partner on my show, Rick Monsi, has been claiming that, and he doesn't watch a ton of wrestling. And so that's why I think he has a little bit of credibility with that. He keeps saying like, no, this Drew guy, this stuff's not going to work when they go back to live crowds. They're going to eat him up. He's too corny. And I've thought, no, it's just you're judging him based on this weird situation, the pandemic. Over the last couple of weeks, I've come more around to that. With the booking, his presentation and everything, that might be the case. I don't think, like, he's not engender Roman and Cena levels of distaste. Like, that's just not going to happen. I see him more in like a Randy Orton situation where, like, you've realized you've been reading your book for the last few minutes of his match or something like that. And that's just, it's not really an indictment on him as a performer. It's just, I could see crowds being pretty apathetic towards him. And that's what I think is, you know, honestly, that's like the worst thing you can get is that apathy. And that's what I fear with him is that they're just kind of, they've had their fill. And, you know, credit to him, he legitimately got over right before the pandemic hit in a very big way with crowd. He was a top push babyface that was getting cheered that hadn't happened in almost 15 years. So I give him credit for that. But I think the fan base is just going to be kind of over him. And I think that's why, kind of similar to what Kyle said, he might just need to be kind of in hiding a little bit when the crowds come back. I don't think he's going to be, but that might be the best course of action.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see. I think a fresh coat of paint, you know, on SmackDown, you know, might help him out too. You know, later in the year when they do the draft. But you know, a lot of time between now and then, and some big shows.
No heel turns though. No heel turns.
No. Oh God. No. Nope. No, not that kind of coat of paint. Just, you know, blue instead of red. Blue instead of red.
That makes sense. I've seen people fight to the death, you know, on Survivor Series because of those colors. So, yeah. Maybe that means something.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. How could I forget? Yes. That's coming up, too.
Your favorite time of year.
Oh, boy. I can start formulating the article for pwtorch.com now. Boy. All right, let's keep the callers going here. We'll go to Nick right now, and Keith, you're up next after Nick. Nick, thanks for calling. What did you think of Raw?
Hey, howdy, Zach and Robert. How you guys doing tonight?
Doing well, man.
I don't know if I got a chance to say, Zach, but congratulations on your new addition. May you be blessed.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and, I mean, we interact in other ways, but, I mean, you know, just on the phone here. Listen, God, I mean, your conversation has brought up so many other points, but the main point I wanted to touch on was it's really a two-parter. It's like I was really surprised that they had Riddle lose with Randy out there, and it almost feels like they're trying to rush to the breakup before they really have the get-together. And I'm also wondering, in the whole thing with MVP and Kofi, are they possibly turning New Day heelish?
Yes. Okay. I'm glad you brought that up, because it's a thing that I have here noted to discuss. I really liked – well, I think we need to take this in two parts. Let's talk about the Kofi and the MVP segment first, Robert. Like, I liked the segment. Like, I thought it was really well done. I thought, you know, bringing up, you know, their past was – great. I thought the kind of demeanor of both of them was on point. I thought Kofi kind of shed some of the silliness around the New Day act and was like talked in a serious way, which I think really resonated. But it, for as good as it was, it came out of like left field for me. Like, as far as like, okay, there's this great segment between these two guys, but where are they going? Like, they're not really connected at this point. You know, Kofi's now out of the title picture for the most part, I think. They're doing their thing with Orton and Riddle. MVP is doing his thing with Lashley, who's with Drew. Yet you have this kind of great angle, this great segment between, you know, MVP and Kofi Kingston. And at this point, I'm just not sure why. Maybe that's the hook, you know, to like, hey, pay attention to this. We're starting a story here. But for as good as it was, Robert, it did feel a little bit out of left field.
Yeah, it definitely felt like more of a seed being planted than really a signal of like where this is going to go next week. I don't know if heel Kofi is necessarily a good idea, but they are kind of spinning their wheels anyway. Currently, they're not like the ill-defined characters in the women's division, but they've kind of transcended baby faces and heels. Within the tag division with the New Day, so a direction I think is needed. Again, I'm not on that super serious train with the New Day that a lot of people are, but I do think there needs to be a little bit more direction with the tag team. And like you said, it was kind of out of left field, but it was also, again, pretty grounded. So I'm okay with that. It wasn't a complete left turn, I should say. It wasn't like, you know, just ridiculous. Like, where did this come from? It makes sense. You know, he has been involved with Lashley in recent weeks, so there is a little bit of that connection. So I'm definitely in a very much in a wait and see approach to it. I don't know how you make Kofi a heel. I really have a hard time thinking how you would flesh that out.
Is that kind of the smoke signal you took from the segment that hey, Kofi's gonna join up with MVP?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how else you could read that, unless just like Kofi, unless Kofi gets the proper feud with Lashley after this pay per view, that could be that's the alternative, right?
Yeah. That is the alternative. Yeah, I mean, it's intriguing. You know, I want to see where they go with it for sure. I thought this was one of the higher points of the show for sure. Go ahead, Nick. Yeah, of course. Yep.
Whole reason why I'm wondering as far as, because New Day, right, when they started a long time ago, they were heelish, if I'm not mistaken. But it's also that recently with the trombone and Xavier, it's they've been keeping their kind of happy-go-lucky attitude, but it's also like they've been cheating more. And I'm just one, you know, it's just, I agree. It'd be really hard to turn Kofi because people have such residual good feelings about him and feel bad about the way he was treated and all that sort of stuff with his six-second loss to Lesnar. But it just, I don't know. I mean, and I hope it's a long-term thing. I mean, I hope it's something that, you know, is, you know, maybe they resolve in the fall, you know, but, you know, and it's just that the fact that they were in there with Riddle and Orton who are definitely, you know, going down the babyface route. So anyway, that's just mm-hmm. what I was kind of thinking.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's something to watch. I think it's an interesting, you know, angle to follow for sure. And Robert, just comment on the Riddle, Randy Orton stuff. Were you surprised by the loss too?
Yeah, I was, because I thought that was the whole point of the segment was like, you know, furthering their bromance a little bit more, and like, you know, Randy is as the veteran coach there, getting him through that. So I just didn't think that was gonna happen. I wasn't as stunned as I was about the Cedric result, but I just didn't think that was the direction that they were going in. Their thing is weird because they are legitimately, I think, gaining chemistry with each other when it's not backstage. And I mean, they even have chemistry in those backstage segments. They're just stupid segments with the key and the lock and all that. But there is something there, and I think something that's going to work in front of audiences. I think audiences are really going to be into them. So I'm kind of withholding my judgment a little bit because I do think it's going to work in front of a wrestling crowd, even if the quality is not necessarily good or it's something you kind of roll your eyes at.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I think whether WWE knew it or not going in, and heck, maybe the idea was like a hot shot, hey, we're going to partner these guys up and then split them up right away. But because of the chemistry that we've seen and the fact that crowds are on the horizon, I think that duo is a duo that's, you know, just ripe to get cheers and maybe even some significant cheers. I mean, Randy Orton alone, you know, even if he's a heel, like, that RKO is getting a cheer, you know, right? I mean, he's got that legacy power at this point. And, you know, Riddle's Riddle. You know, he's got kind of the nonsense backstage, but I think he does deliver when he's in the ring. And I think even more so when you've got that fan reaction to play off of, too. So that's an interesting one. I if I'm WWE and if the plan was, hey, we're going to split these guys soon, I'm calling an audible on that. I mean, this has worked. I don't know that it has a lot of legs to it in terms of directions that you can take it. I mean, obviously you can run them, you know, opposite AJ Styles and Omos at some point. And so I think you can get a solid couple months out of it, but I don't know that it's like a, you know, 2-3 year thing. But for now, I mean, way too early, Robert, to break them up. You know, I just think it's working too well, and I think it's actually elevated kind of the Riddle act to, instead of just being like eye roll inducing, there's a little sympathy behind it with Orton's presence there.
Yeah, it's actually, believe it or not, slightly relatable in a weird way, in that it's like instead of him just being an idiot, which that's still kind of part of it, it's more like, no, he's just kind of this enthusiastic like kid that just wants to dive headfirst into this new job he has. And he's working with like the grumpiest possible coworker you can work with in Randy Orton. So there is kind of something there. It's still kind of a little too absurd for my taste. But the concept as a whole, it's all right.
I like analyzing Randy Orton with the word grumpy. That's fantastic.
Right. Isn't that like his current, like he's no longer like the evil Viper. I think he's like the grump, like the, you know, he's the guy at the office that just worked there for 40 years and has just seen everything. Like, that's what he is on the show now. So, and that's a good goal for him, I think.
Yeah, he's no longer the Viper. He's the really old gorilla who's sitting there pissed off at life.
I mean, there's not many guys who can pull off, like, hey, doing what they did to Edge, you know, just a year ago, you know, to now, like, kind of a likable babyface character. I mean, I think it just, you know, it speaks to just where he is in terms of his career more than anything. I mean, he's legacy star, and I think it's going to be hard to keep him in one lane or the other. And it's been hard, you know, because he's such a good heel that it's, you know, eventually you get that the reaction of, hey, we like this guy. We just like the guy. So, yeah, that kind of gets him in trouble. But, Nick, back to you. Any other topics?
Yeah, no, real quick on the Riddle-Randy thing. It's like the key thing when it happened, it almost seemed it was like organic, okay? And then the second week where Randy threw it on the floor and Riddle cracked himself up looking for it. And unfortunately, WWE can't leave well enough alone. And they're going back to it and back to it and back. And it's, we're going to turn out hating it. But originally, I thought it was gold the first time they did it. And Randy held out his hand and Riddle put the key in it. I mean, it was absolute gold. But
it really was. They did it. They doubled down on it twice tonight. They did it once in the ring, and they did it once backstage too. And you're right. It's going to have just diminishing returns for sure.
Yeah. Last point I just want to make, and then I'll let you guys go to the other callers, is I don't know if you caught this in the Jeff Hardy match, or no, in the Riddle match when he did the Broton, Jimmy Smith, who I thought was okay tonight. You know, nothing great. You know, he's very, you know, uninvolved, but he called it a senton, and Corey threw him under the bus, and said, "No, it's a proton." I was like,
wow.
I was sitting there with my mouth agape. It's like, I don't care whether it's wrestling, football, basketball, NASCAR, you do not throw your co-host under the bus like that. Just let it go.
What did he say exactly?
Jimmy said, oh, he landed the senton when Riddle did his standing Broton. And Corey said, no, it's a Broton. He literally
said those words. In a harsh way? Like, did he yell at him? I don't remember this happening. Did he yell
like
at him?
Right,
or did he just...
Right after he said, no, it's a proton, kind of with that tone.
Ah, okay.
You know, okay. I mean, I was just, let it slide. I mean, Jesus Christ, give the guy a break. But with that,
yeah, I mean, it's only week
guys
two.
Go. Huh?
Thanks, Nick. No, it's like it's only week two, you know? I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, he's got to get better with it for sure, you know, but, you know, you also do want to maintain a level of professionalism. Robert, did you catch that?
No, I didn't see that. I tend to tune out the commentary as best I could. I like Jimmy Smith, so I'm kind of biased on him as a commentator. And hey, I would just like the bar is so low. Like he knew what a senton was. Cool. Like he's better than like 90% of the other announcers they've had coming in over the years. And I think like Corey is, you know, on the opposite end where I just like maybe that's why I didn't hear it because I just tune out everything Corey says, but more than likely, I think that probably came into Corey's earpiece to be like, correct him right now. It's, you know, that's what that,
probably,
that's what
yeah.
that signals to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Nick, thanks
good
so
night,
much
guys.
For the call as always, man. Yeah. You too. All right. We'll keep the line running here. We'll go to Keith, Reverend Keith in Baltimore. Keith, thank you so much for the call. What'd you think of Monday Night Raw tonight, man?
Thank you, Zach. As always, it's good to talk to you and Robert. How are you tonight?
I'm unable to find my mute button, Keith, but other than that, I'm doing great.
doing good. Great to talk to you too, man. What'd you think of Raw?
First, I do want to say, in conjunction with Nick's call, the announcers are heavily produced. So Corey may have been produced to say that in response to Jimmy Smith's comment. So I just wanted to start off by saying that. It may not have been personal. I'm sure it was something that was yelled in his ear to say. What I wanted to focus on, moreover, was the fact that there were two potential heel turn teasers tonight. One, you guys have already discussed at great length, so I don't want to waste your time focusing on that, and that was MVP's excellent promo backstage with Kofi. The other was the Drew McIntyre promo and his actions after the contract signing. First off, you know, he gives this long soliloquy about this story about the Scottishman. He bored the crap out of all of us. We didn't know what he was talking about. Then after the contract was signed, he pulls out a sword. Now, Drew is supposed to be the baby. So when has a baby face ever brought a weapon to a contract signing? Did you guys pick up on that? That was a heel move.
Yeah, man. I mean, I thought that the sword thing, I mean, gosh, you know, I chuckled more than I thought, wow, there's this intense baby face that's ready to win. And that's like, it kind of, I think it's a good point. You know, it didn't signal to me necessarily that, hey, he's going heel, but it was definitely something inconsistent with his presentation. And I think, like Robert said at the top of the show, like, that's kind of the story of that segment. You had the story time with him, then I thought you had the nice go home kind of babyface promo, and then you had the weird sword thing. So just a lot of balls in the air in terms of like what that Drew McIntyre presentation was tonight. A little bit of it heelish. I didn't think, though, that it signaled, hey, a heel turn is coming, but hey, you know, I've been wrong before, Robert.
Yeah, you have, definitely. No, I'm kidding. I thought it was more dorky than heelish, honestly. That's kind of how I took it. It's like, it was more of like a Dungeons and Dragons kind of thing of this big oaf about his sword and cut the desk in half. And that was so farcical, too, to cut the desk in half that went down. So that it was more ridiculous. I don't think that signals a heel turn, though. If I had to guess right now, I would say no. I think what you're hitting on, Keith, it's more of being unlikable than necessarily a heel, than an overt bad guy. It's just a person being unlikable. And we have a lot of unlikable baby faces often in WWE.
And I just, my goodness gracious, I can't understand, like, the need to do the sword thing. Like, I just don't know to what end. Like, that's a good idea. Like, I don't know who that appeals to. I mean, maybe it's a younger audience. Like, I don't know who that's designed for. And I certainly don't think the Drew McIntyre character needs it either. Like, I don't think he needs a sword in general. But, I mean, hey, from a presentation entrance standpoint, that's one thing. But, man, like, cutting a desk in half, like, what does that – what I just don't know what that's – there for
it's just shock value. It's a high shot.
I guess, yeah,
that's what it is. Yeah,
yeah.
It made no sense, guys. No, I was saying it made no sense whatsoever. And I know if I'm expecting the lovable, inspiring Drew McIntyre, okay, to finally take his rightful place by reclaiming the championship at Hell in a Cell, the last thing I want to see is someone who is carving up a table with a sword at the end of his contract signing promo. It just turned me completely off. I was already turned off by his long, boring promo. And then to see that, I'm like, come on. You know, so this is what I think is going to happen, guys. Follow me with this. He should lose to Lashley at Hell in a Cell. Okay, I think he's going to grow more and more and more frustrated in the weeks to come by virtue of not being allowed to ever challenge for the title. And I think he will, somewhere down the road between now and July 16th, when they go on the road, I think he will turn heel. I really can see that coming. And he may just even win Money in the Bank and then be a heel and try to, you know, cash in the briefcase somewhere down the road.
Yeah, I think the briefcase is very much in the cards at this point for him. And, I think it keeps him fresh and around the picture without having the belt. And then you got the intrigue of him cashing in. How he cashes in, I think, will, you know, obviously be a clue as to, you know, the direction his character's going, but yeah, and I don't think I'd be opposed to that. I think coming off of last year with Otis, you know, as the Money in the Bank winner that really went nowhere, I think if you're gonna continue to have that gimmick as part of your as part of WWE's calendar year, you really need to do a big job this year in redefining it as something very, very meaningful. And even in like a, you know, the mixed, even if you're feeling a little mixed on Drew McIntyre, like he's the top guy to kind of hold that briefcase and reestablish what it is. So I'd be on board with that, Robert.
Yeah, I don't hate it either, especially because there's not really like a young guy that seems like they're really in that position for that right now. So I think a main eventer would be a good way to go with it. And it's generally a good way to turn a lukewarm babyface. I think the Money in the Bank, like you're completely heel after you have that thing, because you're just kind of getting in the way of everything. And that's not a, if they're going to go the heel route, that's not a bad way to go. Plus, Keith, I think you're kind of hinting at it too, is it goes back to our earlier conversation. If the crowds are lukewarm on him, maybe their calculus is, well, let's turn him by the time we get to the crowds, so we don't have ourselves, you know, one of those awkward situations. I don't necessarily want Drew to be heel, just because I don't think it was very effective, you know, back in the 2018, 2019 time period. I think he was much more effective as a babyface, okay. But the calculus may have changed, though. Like, we might be in a different landscape, and you know, it's nothing's ever the same as it was before. So there might be some ground to explore there.
Well, I mean, it hits on a broader point. If this show and other shows, whether it's WWE or AEW, you know, or any wrestling company, it's like for the last year, you know, we're kind of just stumbling around in the dark of like, hey, we think this is working, you know, I like it, or, you know, it gets good, you know, feedback on Twitter or social media, but, you know, you don't really know what their reaction is for any of these acts. I mean, and it's going to, you know, potentially be, you know, a rude awakening perhaps on some guys, and probably an awakening in a better light, you know, with others and other acts. But, you know, you just didn't have that feedback for so long, and, you know, soon you will. And that will hopefully, you know, will define pushes, you know, coming out of, you know, or going into more shows with fans.
Right. And it's because it's only been like artistic criticism you've been able to level at any of these guys. You like, and,
right.
And that's not the complete way to, you can judge like a movie that way. You can't judge for wrestling. There's a lot of stuff that maybe like Cena or Reigns did that was perfectly acceptable babyface behavior. But it didn't work in the context of pro wrestling, because that's part of pro wrestling is that lie. You know, it's more, I always say it's more analogous to a music concert or a theater presentation than it is to a TV show or movie, because that component is there. It's been gone a long time. But in case you didn't know, WWE told us about 75 times tonight that they're going back on the road.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Which I don't blame them for promoting their house shows, but like kind of by the 15th reference, I was like, yeah, I get it. You're going to go back on the road.
Yes, right. Exactly. Keith, back to you. Anything else for us tonight?
Okay. One of the things I'm noticing in conjunction with our current discussion is the cool thing to do now in wrestling, especially among the demographic 18 to 49 age group, and I see it all the time on social media, for the fans to cheer the heels. And I think that WWE is going to pick up on that once they go back on the road next month. Therefore, even right now, and case in point, at WrestleMania, Lashley was cheered just as much as Drew, if not more. Okay, it was maybe 50-50 or 55-45. Roman will still be cheered simply because he is such an excellent heel. He is excellent in his role. I mean, he's the cream of the crop right now. And with Heyman by his side, there's no comparison in any wrestling promotion across the borders. So when they go on the road in July, I think that the fans will continue to cheer the heels. And I'm wondering right now, from a creative standpoint, I might be somewhat sarcastic in saying this, I'm wondering if that's why they have such a lack of true baby faces across the brands. If you look at Raw, they are like two baby faces down. I mean, there's no Keith Lee. We know he has the health issues. They're in desperate need of a Finn Balor being called up or Kyle O'Reilly. SmackDown, you have the same baby faces week after week after week. Kevin Owens, you have the Mysterios. And after that, it's really hardly nobody left except Cesaro. So, you know, I think that WWE sees that, and maybe that's why they're not really utilizing all the faces or calling up the baby faces from NXT. And I want you guys to think about that, elaborate on that. Thanks for taking my call. Have a wonderful week, and you will hear me soon.
Thank you very much, Keith. Appreciate it. Appreciate it as always. Yeah, Robert, what do you make of that? I mean, as we said, there's undefined characters all across the show. I mean, mm-hmm. they're in need of some strong baby faces. I think it certainly will, you know, gives a lot of WWE credit to say, all right, they've foresaw all of this, you know. So I don't know that I'm ready to go full into that pool, but, you know, I think Keith, you know, it makes a decent argument.
Well, they're set up, I think, well for some of these things. Like, I think they're actually there's probably a little more smoke to that fire in a few different ways. And we've already hit on them. I think Alexa is clearly a preparation for live crowd. I think the Eva Marie thing is definitely prep for live crowd. I think the Orton thing is. I don't know specifically what Keith brought up on the babyface thing. I don't know if they're just purposely not creating babyfaces for that reason. I just think it's just a general struggle they have in creative, and I think it's easier to make a heel. I think if you're writing any form of fiction, it's probably, you know, bad guys are much simpler, I think, to construct than an interesting and dynamic good guy. So I don't know if that has to do with, like, oh crap, everybody's going to get booed or everything's going to be flipped. I do think they are aware of it. Like, they had a lot of time to prep for it. So I do think they have at least some awareness of it and how it's going to play out. But then there's going to be some I don't know, what kind of reaction is freaking Jackson Ryker going to get when we go into crowds? Like, you know,
right.
there's some other factors there. Like, you know, the New Day's going to get cheered almost, you know, no matter what they're doing. So I don't know that it's the baby face issue in general. I think they're setting it more on the heel side of where the cheers and boos are going to go.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I think the other thing, too, that they'll have to, like, take into account is, like, you know, the fact that a lot of these acts are going to get cheered just out of the gate because fans are back in the building for the first time. I imagine, you know, like New Day, right? You kind of walk in this fine gray area, but when that audience sees them for the first time, you know, in what's been a very long time, they're going to get a pop. Randy Orton's going to get a pop. That's why I think Drew McIntyre still will get one. Bobby Lashley might even get one. You know, I mean, he's that guy is in a completely different position than he was when, you know, fans were around last. So, I mean, I think there's, like, he's going to get the pop of, you know, respect of, like, man, all right, great. You know, you're this big star now, you know? So, I mean, they're going to have to navigate those waters too, to figure out, all right, what pops are going to stick and which ones, you know, which reactions are just kind of there.
Right. And they're marketing an actual kind of tour, something they haven't really done in a long time. So what that signals to me is, like, the people that are going to this, like, you're getting, it's the people that are going to get their tickets as soon as the pre-sale opens up. And, like, I think these are going to do pretty well actually at the live event standpoint, which means people are going to be looking forward to going. It's not just, oh, the wrestling show's in town, maybe we should go tonight kind of thing. I think it's going to be a very deliberate effort on the side of fans. So I think there might just be good vibes all around for a short while. But then the nausea will set in and everything else will kind of level itself off. I know this is the Raw show. The Roman one to me is the most intriguing one though. I think, and again, I don't want to get diverted here. I think he'll get booed. He'll get the Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins booing from whenever they're just good heels. And it's like, excellent job, sir. We approve of that. We will boo you because you are doing the requisite thing. I don't think it's the boos that Roman used to get, or it's not going to be like the, oh, we turned him heel, so now everybody's going to cheer. I think it's going to be like, thank you, sir, for your service. We will now boo you appropriately. And Rod, I don't think he necessarily has that as much. Like, last year, I think is doing a good job getting over as a heel. And like I said, kind of a cool act. So there might be that. I think it'll be more of a mixed reaction on the Rod side with characters like a Lashley.
Yeah. I'm with you. I hope fans play along with Roman because that's been really good. So we'll see. All right, we'll continue on here. Skype call. Skype call. You are up next. You are up next. All right, I'm going to go ahead and dump that one. Sorry about that.
Alexa got us.
Oh, the doll is behind me right now. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to be looking over my shoulder tonight as I walk upstairs, you know? It's just going to happen.
Yeah, check your DMs while we're on air, just for something I sent you, Zach, and we can incorporate it into the show.
Okay, I will. While I do that, we will go. We'll go to Javier. Javier, thanks for waiting, man. Great to have you on. What'd you think of Raw tonight?
Hey, Zach. Hey, Robert. How's it going, guys?
Going good.
Yeah, it reminded me I need to buy some vodka and start drinking during these shows. Robert, you said you're afraid of dolls?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a spectrophobe, so I'm like not super comfortable around mirrors. So that's the part that got to me, was the fact that the doll only appears in the mirror. So that was, once that scene popped up with the music and stuff, I'm like, it's going to be a long night.
I mean, there was like a little bit of, I mean, that doll, you know, creepy, even if, I mean, I don't have like a sitting fear of dolls, but it's still kind of like, hey, you know, it's not, I don't want to keep looking at that.
Okay. But the mirror thing is interesting that Javier is hitting on though, because Javier, are you like Hulk Hogan then when you can only see the Ultimate Warrior in the mirror? Because I kind of think we had a vibe of that going on as well tonight too. The mirrors were doing a lot of tricky things. So I feel for you, man.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, because it wasn't that the doll was behind her, is that it was behind her, but it's only visible in the mirror, which is, you know, one of those like, you know, common horror trope that they do, that the ghost only appears in the mirror. Mine is more, because mine comes from, I think, Conan the Destroyer, that has a scene where Conan's fighting this guy in this hall of mirrors, and like, yeah, and that got like super freaky because the guy's walking out of mirrors and stuff. So that's kind of like, ever since, I've not been comfortable around mirrors. I don't trust them. Not even when I'm backing out of a car, I have to like make sure I'm looking, because I don't trust that, you know, that the mirror's telling me the truth. So
You guys are going to make me rethink everything. Thanks a lot.
So I mean, it kind of worked for me because it was spooky enough. It was definitely more like spooky for kids. So it was more like what was it? The Disney Haunted Halloween and less Universal Halloween Horror Nights. If you know what I mean. So
yeah,
but for the most part, I kind of dug that. Plus, you know, I liked how Baszler is like refuting the fact that stuff is happening. She's like, it's just a doll. It's just a doll, to reassure herself. Either you guys ever see The Crow?
Of course,
I have not. I have not seen that movie. Shame on me.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're really, shame on you. Robert, have you seen it?
Yeah, I like it quite a bit.
Yeah, you remember T-Bird's death? Basically, in The Crow, the main character comes back from the dead to you know, get revenge on everybody who were responsible for the death of him and his girlfriend. And then the guy, you know, when he's like, he figures out that he's come back from the dead, he's like, it can't be you. You know, there's no coming back. There's no coming back. And like, you know, for the entire scene, he's like, he's not coming back. You know, there's no coming back. You know, he's freaking out because, you know, it's him trying to process that. And that just reminded me of Baszler, you know, what Baszler was doing. It's like, you know, it's just a doll. It's just a doll. You know, so I thought it was good. I mean, whether it belongs in wrestling is a different story. But
yeah,
you know,
right.
And at least that story's moving.
It's a nice touch, though. It's a nice touch, though, to add that. Instead of her just being, like, shrieking in fear, the way, like I said, going back to, like, how they had the Seth Rollins thing going on, I think that would have been just too ridiculous. I liked that part of it, Javier. I think that really worked.
Yeah, because that was actually what I mentioned on last week's post-show was, you know, that she can't outright show fear like in the way that Seth Rollins did. So, I mean, it's okay to find, you know, to feel fear once you actually start seeing ghosts for real. You know, at that point, it's okay. But, you know, Seth Rollins was just a guy getting in his face, as far as he knows, you know. So, but yeah, so I was fine with it.
We talked earlier about like the Bliss character, you know, and it, her range on the show. I mean, for you as somebody who is high on the kind of the this type of thing on Raw, like, where do you fall on, like, can Bliss become champion, and how does it pivot into a live setting with fans in the building?
At this point, you can't really speculate on that, because with the draft coming up on August 30th, she's probably going to run through Shayna Baszler, because I think the Shayna Baszler is just going to build to eventually Bliss going up against. I think we might have mentioned it last time you were on, that this is going to lead to Bliss going after. After Nia Jax, because I think that's where that ends up. And I think by the time we get to that point, it's going to be time for the draft. So maybe she starts feuding with somebody else and they keep her away from the title, or maybe then that's the point where she goes after the title. I think that for the time being, you might want to keep her out of the title picture when you have Bianca Belair on one brand and Rhea Ripley on the other. Keep her out of that title picture for the time being, but, you know, put her in other programs that, you know, and have that be like another major storyline. And eventually, if you want to, you know, go into the, you know, at some point later, you could do that technically, but it's just that the belt complicates things, you know, like the Undertaker never really needed the belt, until the, you know, obviously until the Taker era and that sort of stuff, that's, you know, fine. But, you know, when he was like, the pure, you know, like, you know, zombie come to life, he didn't really need the title at that point.
Yep. What else do you got for us tonight?
On the Drew McIntyre thing, I appreciate that Drew McIntyre is trying to make the whole repetitive nature of the feud to work, right? But, you know, with the story that he gave. But the problem is that the story that he was talking about, of the whole spider thing and Robert the Bruce, basically in that story, it, you know, we're Robert and Drew McIntyre is the spider, right? But, you know, how bored must Robert have been, you know, in that cave to spend that, you know, for that spider to catch his attention. You know, we, the audience, you know, most of us are not living in a cave hiding for our lives. You know, we have other things that we could turn to.
Right.
So, you know, that's the problem with the repetitive nature of the whole storyline, because it's not just the whole storyline. I did a double take when Rhea Ripley said, oh, I respect Nikki Cross. In that backseat segment, I could have sworn it was the exact same dialogue they used 2 weeks ago to set up the 2-minute match.
No, and if you think back to that match, though, she didn't act respectful in the match either. Like, if you watch the match, she's really dismissive of Cross.
I'll be in 2 minutes. I mean, yeah.
and the same thing.
Yeah, and then the same thing today was like, you know, oh, I respect her. I'll fight her again and beat her again. I'm like, you know, easily. That was the thing. It was like, you know, she's an afterthought. You know, so yeah, that whole thing, you know, and it's like the repetitive nature of everything. And I'm, you know, I'm kind of – because, yeah, you can make the excuse that, oh, well, they're about to go on the road, so maybe they're saving stuff. And I'm like, I am tired of that excuse, you know? I'm tired of the, you know, making excuses for, like, them not setting stuff up. I mean, think about the stuff that we saw. I'm going all over the place. Think about the people who were, like, involved in most of the in most of the matches today. You opened up with a tag team battle royal where they're so short on tag teams that they had two individuals in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you have Ricochet and Humberto Carrillo, which haven't exactly – I mean, I know they're trying to build them up, but, you know, why are they so low on, you know, why do you have to rebuild them up when you've, like, basically destroyed them? Cedric Alexander, I mean, you know, again, same thing. Jeff Hardy's been, you know, completely missing. You have Drew Gulak, who's, you know, running after things. You're trying to use him to get Mansoor over. It's like that's you know they're basically staffing the entire show with people you'd expect to be running after the 24/7 title.
Yeah, I mean that's a thing. I mean that's definitely a thing. And you brought up a point that made me think about Drew McIntyre a little bit too, as far as like what you said about that story. And I think the thing that like is not connected for me with this kind of run for Drew here is that I guess I just think that when I think of WrestleMania and when I think of his match against Bobby Lashley, like to me he lost. Like he lost clean. And I know that there's like they did that distraction element, but I thought it was really ineffective because he kind of did distract him, but it really wasn't like a really big distraction or anything like that. Like McIntyre, you know, should have been able to just kind of brush that off. And so they lean on like, hey, he's getting this opportunity because, you know, whatever, it was a triple threat last time. And then before that it was WrestleMania, but he got distracted by MVP. Like, I guess when I go back to that root point on that day and think of how that match played out, you know, it wasn't significant enough for me to be kind of the point in the pinwheel that kind of has this whole feud revolving around on it. I think that's a very weak place to start here. And I kind of think Drew has kind of like gotten a little bit weaker because of it. Robert, I'll throw to you on that first.
Yeah. And I think we talked about it at the top. He's running the risk very much of just kind of being the sore loser. And I think that WrestleMania is kind of where that really started sticking out. But even prior to that, you know, with the Money in the Bank stuff and all that, it was just a little too complainy the whole time. And it kind of kept going and going and going. And it's like, it's one of those things like, you know, if the babyface can't get the job done, like at some point, why are we still having faith in the babyface? And I think all those factors have sort of just kind of hung over Drew since about the WrestleMania time. And it's weird because this didn't exist then, and it's what I said earlier about it, just something about it in the chase, it's not working right now. They have to figure a way to retool that character whenever he doesn't have the title, because it also goes back to what Javier is saying too, because it's a lot of the same promo a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. it feels like mm-hmm. you could just copy and paste them each week into different ones.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Javier, back to you.
Yeah. And well, and you actually just got me thinking about that WrestleMania match. Cause yeah, I've been complaining about that since that happened is cause it was a clean win. I mean, yeah, the guy just yelled, he yelled at you and you lost concentration. That's on the baby face. So he lost that match,
right?
You know, so, whether MVP yelled or not. And by the way, how's the cell going to prevent that from happening? You know, so I'm wondering if that was actually a missed spot by MVP, because that spot looked like it should have been like a trip with his cane, because he was about to do the Claymore, and had he used the cane to like, you know, trip him up and hold him back for a second, that would have been a legit interference at that point. You know, when somebody grabs the guy's foot from the outside, and I'm wondering if he was just not in position, so he just yelled at him, and then that's what led to the finish. You know, because that would have probably made more sense. You know, but yeah,
could be. I mean, it certainly wasn't effective enough. You know,
yeah. So I mean, I think Drew McIntyre is probably one of the best baby faces they've built in like such a long time too. And so it's really frustrating for me to see that all be, you know, basically pissed away essentially. And then you have the situation of like, does he win? You know, I mean, if Drew McIntyre wins, then, you know, and I read it last week, what I wrote on the primer for the three-way match, you know, why he can't win. It's you had a chance for him to win at WrestleMania in front of fans. You're going to have him in Hell in a Cell in front of an empty arena? That makes no sense. There's no reason for him to win unless you're one of these, you know, poetry people. And since he had lost the didn't he lose the title to Randy Orton in Hell in a Cell?
He did, yes.
Yeah, so if it's like a poetry thing that, you know, he lost in a cell, now he wins it in a cell, then, you know, okay, maybe you can make that argument. But it makes no sense why he would win in front of no fans when you had the opportunity to give him the title at WrestleMania. And if you wanted to then, you know, make it a back and forth, he could have lost it, you know, later. So for those reasons, I mean, you know, if McIntyre wins, then whoever booked everything from WrestleMania is an absolute total idiot. And so it means that he basically can't win. So if he can't win, then, you know, where do you go on from there? I mean, somebody brought up the Money in the Bank. That kind of maybe might be their way to, you know, he could back himself into getting another match. Like, he wins the Money in the Bank and then, you know, cashes it in and says that he wants a match with Lashley at SummerSlam, in which case it's like you're both welshing on the stipulation and you're doing the match again.
So, right. Yeah.
So I'm not sure.
I mean, I think Money in the Bank works for him. I mean, they booked themselves into a corner. Because, I mean, and then the other, like, element of this, too, is, like, you know, yeah, I mean, Drew McIntyre, especially if he, you know, spits a big game about winning, you know, you want your baby faces to be credible. So he needs the win. But, you know, Bobby Lashley does, too. I mean, he's got something going on. He is clicking, you know, as champion. And I think he's got some big matches, you know, potentially lined up for the summer, you know, maybe with Brock Lesnar or, you know, just, I think those possibilities are there for him. And I know they're having, you know, he needs to win too. And they have a situation where they have two guys that need to be protected, but they're in a Hell in a Cell match. And one of them is going to have to do the job. Presumably, I guess, Robert.
Well, I mean, Brock Lesnar could come out and rip off the side of the cell, and that means you call it. Didn't we have a streak there of like three straight years of Hell in a Cell having non-finishes? So
we did.
Maybe that's the direction you go. The Money in the Bank thing, that's another element I hadn't thought about, though. What if he's just Money in the Bank holder, but he can't cash in on Lashley because of the stiff? Like, if they actually honored it, that would actually add some intrigue to that thing. The other thing, too, is as you were saying that, I was thinking, you know, where does he go? It's part of the problem, too, like outside of Randy Orton, who he's had an extensive feud with, there's like not another top guy that's not a champion right now, it feels like, on the show. And maybe there is, and I'm just not thinking of who that person is. Because it feels like you've got that little mix in the main event, and then there's not really an upper mid-card. Like, the next level is the Sheamus level and those guys and the guys that are in the tag division. Like, there's not really like somebody that's just kind of waiting in the wings there on the upper mid card that I'm seeing right now that he could have like a really blow away feud to, you know, buy time as he's not in the title picture anymore.
I'm just kind of running through guys in my head. Yeah. I mean, I don't think that act is there either. Yeah. No, it's not something. I mean, maybe we're in a call up situation, you know, I don't know. Javier, back to you. For, you know, anything else tonight?
Yeah, man, it's just a rough situation for that to figure out what's going on, and, you know, it's such a waste. I'll go ahead and I don't think I've shown it too much, but I'm a bit of a devil's advocate, so let me go ahead and defend Riker. In, you know, I saw him down here in when he was on NXT, it was the Forgotten, you know, the Forgotten Sons were there, and he was the only one that stood out of that group. He had like a physical presence that, like, you know, the guy that turns eyes, and so I think that's a good starting point. I think that's why they're giving him a chance. So I don't, you know, although it, I and here's the thing, because was there a match more WWE-rific Vince matchup ever than Elias versus Ryker? Just visually.
Definitely not.
Lots of muscles.
Just
lots
visually.
Lots of muscles.
Yeah. Oil.
Yeah, and the wrestling style, too. It was, like, such WWE wrestling style. So it's like, I was watching, I'm like, man, this feels like Vince McMahon's vision on the screen right now.
Yeah, and I mean, I just don't know that that's a good thing for the show. I mean, obviously it's all Vince McMahon's vision, but I don't know that that's good. I mean, you know, I'm willing to bet that it's not a good thing for, you know, for the future. I mean, I don't think Jackson, I mean, we'll see, you know, but from what I've seen so far, I just don't know that he has just the presence to be much, but you know, hey, you know, again, you have a different perspective on that, 'cause you saw him in front of a live crowd. Maybe that changes, but you know, I just can't go there.
Just to be clear, I said that I've said that there was no potential in the other two. There's very
right.
slight
Fair
potential
point.
With
Fair
this one, and it's going to require a deft hand to get it out. So I'm not saying to start.
The hell of a curve you're grading on there, Javier.
Yeah, I just
the one guy that had a pulse next to the two corpses. Okay.
Just want to make sure I don't get pilloried either, you know?
No, fair point.
You know, but that's what I said, that he at least looked like he could be on TV as opposed to the other two. Who was it, Cutler and Wesley Blake, I think?
Yes, yep.
Yeah. Oh, then I get to see what Cutler's like on Impact, so.
There you go.
And let me see, and there's a lot, and I don't want to take up too much more of your time.
We covered.
I did want.
No, all you. Yep.
Oh yeah. No, I just want. I also wanted to defend the idea of Nikki and how she acted. I am 100% fine with her acting like so over the top that when she won, just because that is her character, and she's one of the wrestlers that actually like really knows her character. Probably, you know, I don't know how much of that is really her. When she first came out, I mean, just look at because her first appearance in a while was her as a lumberjack during that that match, and she was like so over the top. She seemed like just so happy to be out in front of the camera. And so, you know, I could totally buy her in you know, oh, I even though, you know, I won by only surviving 2 minutes, yay, I could totally buy her, like, you know, her excitement on that. And the messed up thing is that because she's technically, you know, and Corey Graves, like, said that, oh, they lost by disqualification. So that's why it's actually an official victory for her, because the other two wrestlers were disqualified because they didn't beat her in 2 minutes. So, you know, in the record books, it counts as a victory. So, you know, although it's not really, you know, really is a victory. But in any case, with her having the two victories plus the pinfall on this, I almost want them to just make it a triple threat match at Hell in a Cell and then Nikki come out as a champion, because she's the only person who's likable in this whole thing.
I mean, can't argue with that. I don't know. I just think to be in that title picture, you probably need a little bit more than what she's shown or being presented as. But with that said, I mean, without question, you know, she's the most likable out of those three for sure. I mean, and there is like I said at the top when we were talking about this, I mean, there is an authenticity in how she handled that not everybody can pull off. I don't think everybody can pull off, you know, that type of, you know, this type of story, you know, and come across as real. And even though I think you want to be careful, you know, celebrating that kind of a win, like, there is a part of her character that's lovable in that way. And she's all in on it. And you know, it just kind of tells you, like, I don't know, they have somebody there that I think gets, like you said, Javier, like gets her character, gets what she's supposed to be. And it's not that, I mean, look, I think Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair have a higher ceiling than she does, but they're so undefined that ceiling comes way down because you don't know how you're supposed to feel about them. And it makes Nikki Cross stick out as someone like, all right, she gets what's going on. Like you can get behind her. She's likable. And there's a lot of people on the show, not just in the women's division, that just don't have that going for them, Robert.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And I just think that I think Nikki does a great job in the execution of what she's doing. I just think what she's given as a character is pretty ridiculous. But it's kind of hard with her, and I was thinking about this during the show, because the two different versions of what they portrayed Nikki as, she's at a 10 the entire time, and it's kind of hard to have a character where you're always at that level. I think you need to level out a little bit to be a more fully fleshed out character. But I mean, I echo mostly what you said about her just really pouring everything into literally everything they give her, and what they give her is never really that good.
Yeah. Javier, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Any other notes for us tonight before we head to emails?
Well, just one thing on the thing was Reverend Keith, I think, was the one who brought up the MVP Kofi thing. I think the whole point of that was that they're setting up what's going to be Lashley's next opponent, whether he has the title or not. I think Kofi's going to end up pushing back on the whole thing, and then that's going to lead to, since I'm thinking Lashley wins, I'm thinking that they might want to be setting up possibly like Kofi SummerSlam instead of Kofi Mania. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Have that be a Kofi Lashley feud for WrestleMania. SummerSlam.
If that's what that was, I think that's smart. And you don't see WWE do that too often in terms of like setting something up like that, you know, what amounts to essentially a few weeks ahead of time. So I like that. I like that direction. The show can use more of that type of thing, you know, consistently.
Yeah, occasionally do it.
It would make sense,
too.
Yeah, Javier, it would make sense, too, because, like, suddenly the Kofi title win and the loss to Brock Lesnar are, like, really part of canon now after being ignored for a year. So I think that's a clear signal, too, that there's – even though he's in the tag division, like, he's a presence in that main event scene. And I think that is a, you know, pretty logical transition.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
Thanks, Javier.
Have fun with the emails.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. Thanks for the call as always. Great to talk to you.
All right, good night.
All right, we'll put a thanks to Javier as always. We'll wrap up the caller portion with that, Robert. Thank you to everybody who called. Great stuff, and we will move to emails right now.